You there, honey?
Welcome.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The AFL-CIO has generated nearly 125,000 letters so far to McDonald's and Chipotle executives calling on them to improve wage and working conditions for workers harvesting tomatoes in Florida. The coalition of Immokalee workers took on another giant company and won when they launched a similar campaign at Taco Bell to get that fast food giant to agree to pay more for tomatoes so the harsh working conditions of tomato workers could be improved. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney visited Immokalee in April. AFL-CIO says that it's just the beginning of its participation supporting Immokalee workers in this McDonald's campaign.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Would-be whistleblowers might need to start whistling a new tune after the Supreme Court ruled earlier this week that what public employees say is not always protected under the First Amendment. The vote came down 5-4, with Samuel Alito casting the deciding vote. Jeff Rook is Executive Director of Public Employees for Environmental Protection. He explains the potential impact of the decision.
It makes candor inside the agencies much more difficult and creates this anomaly that says public employees will have constitutional protection only when they go outside of their job duties or go public. And those that try and resolve issues constructively within their chain of command have no constitutional protection.
Rook added that the new rules will now give management even more control over employees.
And in agencies that have greater discretion, they'll know that they're on much stronger grounds to get rid of these people right away. In other words, management is now armed with the legal tools to snuff out dissent early and effectively without challenge.
Healthcare Now, a national coalition of labor, community, and faith-based groups, is calling for a national day of local actions June 7th, in support of the United States National Health Insurance Act. That act has been introduced in the U.S. House by Representative John Conyers of Michigan. The Conyers bill would create a single-payer national health care plan covering all necessary medical procedures for everyone in the U.S. 70 members of Congress are co-sponsoring the bill. Now, here's Greg Gordon with Wynn Sports.
Lance Armstrong has been cleared of doping charges stemming from the 1999 Tour de France. Last August, a French newspaper reported that six of Armstrong's urine samples from 1999 came back positive for EPO when they were retested in 2004. Armstrong has strongly denied using the endurance-boosting hormone or any other banned substance. The International Cycling Union accused the World Doping Agency of misconduct and unfairly targeting Armstrong. Armstrong retired from professional cycling after winning his seventh consecutive Tour de France in 2005.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
They worry of me try to taste some soy of me.
That's right, it's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' gains, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome to the radio program this evening. This is Bruce Birch, and this is the Bruce Birch Radio Program being brought to you under the auspices of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream, and you know what they're also doing? They're also sponsoring the programming on this network, and so you know what? If you want to check them out, go to wvcarpenter.org, and I'll bet you you can get right in there and see what they're all about. And not only that, but if you get a chance, you should send them an email and let them know that you are happy, proud to be a listener, and proud that they are supporting the wonderful programming here on the Head On Radio Network. Just wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up on some of the things that are happening this week. But before I do that, wanted to also give you the toss out, if you will, toss out the connection information, which you just heard at the top of the program. You can dial in at 1-877, the number 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, 1-877, the number 4, head on, or, if you like numbers, like I like numbers, 1-877-443-2366. 1-877-443-2366 will get you into the radio program, into our studios in West Virginia. And guess what? We'll pick up the dime. Not only is it free speech, but it's also free for your pocketbook. So that should so we're picking up the dime. Radio for Free America. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program. You can also send me an email if you're so inclined to bruce@brucebirch.com. That's Bruce Birch, B-U-R-C-H.com. Now that you know how to get a hold of me, I know how to get a hold of you. What an interesting day today. Today is not the best day, but it is the day it is. Today is the 17th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square Massacre, and we're going to talk about that some today. We're also going to talk about a number of news stories that I have out there, including the fact that for those of you who are fans of the Grateful Dead, yesterday the former keyboardist Vince Welnick, who was the last keyboard player of the Grateful Dead, passed away yesterday at age 51, and we're going to have a little bit of a little tribute to him as well. But not the least of which is, you know, the most important stuff here that we do on this radio network is your phone calls. This is conversation radio. So, again, I strongly encourage you, if you're so inclined and want to get in on the program tonight, you can do that. Wanted to cover a real quick story before I go too far into the radio program this evening, and that is that the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association has voted unanimously to investigate whether President Bush, the resident, the decider, President Bush, has exceeded his constitutional authority in reserving the right to ignore more than 750 laws that have been enacted since he took office. Apparently, this Board of Governors met in New Orleans yesterday and approved the creation of an all-star legal panel with a number of members from both political parties. They include a former federal appeals court chief judge, a former FBI director, and several prominent scholars to evaluate Bush's assertions that he has the power to ignore laws that conflict with his interpretation of the Constitution. Okay. Okay, what's, you know, can anyone guess what I think is stupid about this? Okay, you got it. And that is that I don't know that we need a federal appeals court chief judge, an FBI director, and several prominent scholars to tell us that what George Bush has been doing is an actual, not just an interpretation of the Constitution, it's actually in violation of the Constitution. What he's done is he has appended statements, these signing statements. If you don't know what these are, let me tell you. These signing statements are statements that he has appended to laws that are passed, and they come to him from the Congress, and then he signs them. But what he does is he assigns, he puts these statements, and basically, now, this is not the first time that this has been done. Ronald Reagan sort of created it. I think even Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton also did these signing statements. But what this president has done has been something completely different. What he's done is he has created statements that basically note which provisions he believes interfere with his powers, rather than saying this is how I interpret this and this is how I plan to implement this law. It's more about this is how I don't think this is right, and this is how I plan to subvert the law. Among the laws that Bush has challenged are the ban on torturing detainees, oversight provisions of the USA Patriot Act, and whistleblower protections for federal employees. That's right. Stuff that involves principles. Stuff that involves democratic principles are the ones that he believes are the ones that he should challenge. He has challenged the ban on torturing detainees because, that's right, that's the only way we can get decent information out of anyone is to beat the crap out of them. He's challenged the oversight provisions of the USA Patriot Act because he is God and no one else can speak for him. I'm trying to remember, he's a member of the Methodist Church. I'm trying to think about which tenet in the Methodist Church says that he is beholden to no one, but I don't think there is one. And then there's the whistleblower protections for federal employees. Now, the Supreme Court also ruled recently that the whistleblower protections for federal employees are basically, that they do not outweigh the need for secrecy in government. And the whistleblower protections are there in place to safeguard our democracy. They're there in place to ensure that the federal government cannot break the law that they've created, that they cannot break the law in order to accomplish certain ends without, without employees saying, okay, wait a minute, this is wrong. Now, if you'll notice that the perfect case in point is that the woman who I believe it was a lady who broke the entire CIA secret prison story was fired by the CIA for leaking that story to the press. Now, you know, what did the Bush administration get riled up about? Not the fact that they've got secret prisons where they're torturing people in violation of the Geneva Conventions. That's not what they got upset about. What they got upset about was the fact that this person said, wait a minute, folks, this is wrong. You shouldn't be doing this. This is not the right thing to do. And then leaked it to the press, probably as a last resort, after having said, I can't believe that they're doing this. So the current dictator in chief there, he, dear leader, as our friend Bob Kincaid calls him, has over 750 laws that he has appended these signing statements to. And now the American Bar Association has decided that what it wants to do is to really take a look at it and see whether or not this has any legal standing at all whatsoever. The signing statements task force, which was recruited by the ABA's president, Michael Greco, who is a longtime Boston lawyer and who served on former Governor William F. Weld's Judicial Nominating Council, includes several Republicans as well. Among them are Mickey Edwards, a former Oklahoma representative from 77 to 93, and Bruce Fine, a Justice Department official under President Reagan. And Bruce Fine, I believe, actually testified in a hearing recently that was, and if I remember correctly, his statements were pretty damning against the president. Now, you know, I do want to make it clear that there are a number of Republicans, real Republicans, the ones that, you know, are a lot less evil than this present administration, who have come out and said a lot of things about this this president, and, you know, have and, you know, who have come out and made statements that are, you know, completely breaking with the Republican Party. And we'll get over to that, some of that, a little bit later. But, you know, it's just a damn shame that this guy can't even uphold the law. No, he just can't even uphold the law. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program, and if you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. You can also send me an email if you're so inclined. Bruce@BruceBirch.com, B-U-R-C-H, Bruce@BruceBirch.com. You listen to the Bruce Birch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from
inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network. When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Back on the radio with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. I am Bruce Birch, and if you'd like to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877, the number 4, Head On. That's 1-877-443-2366. Love those Rolling Stones, absolutely. All right, I left out of that last segment talking a little bit about the ABA group, the American Bar Association Task Force, that is going to be investigating whether or not George Bush's signing statements are in violation of law. Now, I also wanted to bring to your attention that Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has promised to hold a hearing on Bush's use of signing statements. Specter pledged the action after an article in the Boston Globe described the scope and details of Bush's assertions concerning the laws in them. Now, all right, that's fine, Arlen Specter. You can go and do your little hearings, but we know that what you're going to do. Specter can no more hold a realistic hearing on anything regarding this government than the man in the frickin' moon can do it. And let me tell you why I think that's so. Specter is, for all of his bluster and his talking about and talking tough, really has just gone along, towed the line, if you will, right along with this Bush administration. You know, so for him to even put out there that he's going to hold a hearing on Bush's use, this government for 6 freaking years has not held a decent hearing on any damn thing, nothing of any consequence at all, whatsoever. So when you hear people like Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, talk about how they're going to hold hearings, we're going to hold a hearing. Well, back in the old days when, you know, you had statesmen in government who were more concerned with the rule of law, like they said, than they were with political and partisan politics, political ideas, threatening to hold a hearing or promising to hold a hearing might actually carry some weight. But in this present government, wherein all of the houses of government, all of the estates, if you will, of government, are held by Republicans, Republicans, Rethuglicans, whatever you want to call them, wherein all of the houses of government are held by the right wing, promising, Arlen Specter promising to hold a hearing is like me saying, you know, it's just ridiculous. It holds no water. It holds absolutely no water at all. Now, Specter was one of two Republicans who voted against, I think there was two, maybe he was the only one. He was at least one Republican who voted against the confirmation of Michael Hayden on the floor of the Senate. But I believe Specter is also facing re-election this fall. So he has to actually look like he's doing something worthwhile rather than being a whipping boy for the Bush administration, which is what he's been for the last 5 years. So, Arlen Specter is going to hold hearings on the Bush's use of signing statements. Give me a freaking break. All right. This just in. Bruce's show is now called the Bruce Bruce Radio Program. My friend Peter in the chat is bringing that to the fore. Yes, I've decided that I want to drop the title on All Things Reconsidered. Mainly because I feel like we're going to be taking this show at some point in the very near future. We're going to be taking this show to a daily show, and when that day happens, we're going to change a lot of the imaging around the show. We're going to create a whole lot of neat promos and all kinds of stuff for it. So we're going to drop the All Things Reconsidered. And actually, the interesting thing, just as an aside, is that the time slot that we're looking at having me on for a daily show will actually be in the same time slot as All Things Considered. So, in the grander scheme of things, I just seemed like it might be the best idea, perhaps, to not go head-to-head against them and call it an All Things Reconsidered. So, trying to avoid the lawsuits, ladies and gentlemen. And plus, you know, I have great respect for Nationalist Public Radio. Now, let's go over to the phones. I understand that my good friend Michael Stettler is on the line. Mr. Steady, how are you doing tonight, sir? Hello, is there Agnes? Do we have Steady on line one? I'm not hearing anyone on line one. Okay, he was there and now he's gone. Okay, all right. So keep your eyes peeled. Now, let me tell you who's going to be on this task force, just so you have an idea of who's going to be on it. The task force includes Harold Coe, Dean of Yale Law School, former official in the Reagan and Clinton administrations, Kathleen Sullivan, former Dean of Stanford Law School, Charles Ogletree, a Harvard Law professor, and Stephen Salzberg, a professor at George Washington University Law School, who was also a Justice Department official under Reagan and the first President Bush, as well as a prosecutor in the Iran-Contra scandal. And he has gone on the record to say that he does not believe that signing statements are unconstitutional. Well, thanks for having an open mind, Mr. Salzberg, before you get on your task force and come to a decision. All right. Anyway, let's move right along away from there and on to something else. Okay. Looks like we're back. We do have Michael back on. Michael from Ojai, California. Are you back on with us?
I am, Bruce. Sorry, I've had a few phone problems here, but I think that's in-house, but on the note.
Well, you make that phone behave.
I'm trying to. I really am. It's actually becoming, the caller ID's been coming up with some interesting numbers. I got a phone call today with a 1-000-000-0000 number right after I had got a remote call from the challenging GOP candidate to Elton Gallagher
at
my house. For
they called your house?
Yeah, campaigning because Tuesday's the primary here in California.
Did you So he called your house to say, he called your house to campaign and you're running against it.
Well, I didn't qualify again, but yes, I was at his barbecue picnic dropped off a letter to open letter to Elton Gallagher, which is on your website, as well as some current event information that I thought he'd find useful for debate. But at the time he called, I called him right back because he left a number, and I said, as a constituent, I'd vote for you if I was voting Republican. And I appreciated your chicken dance. He did a little chicken dance out there, because Gallagher wouldn't debate him anyways. And I'm not making the association, but it was rather weird in Arbor's here too. Oh, about 15 minutes later, a helicopter flew right over the house. And about 10 minutes, 20 minutes after that, I got this phone call from 000, 000,
wow.
0000. It was just kind of weird, but earlier in the week or last part of last month, I got calls from the U.S. House of Representatives on a phone number or a phone bank, and I'll give everyone listening that phone number right now, and they can check it out or Google it, because it's from the House of Representatives. But if you search the net, people have made comments about getting calls from this number at the House of Representatives, and it's 202. 226-9928.
Okay.
And a couple of people have made comments. I didn't post anything up about it, but it is interesting. I really don't know what to make of it. I don't. On the note of my campaign, I have a civil matter coming up in Ventura County Superior Court here regarding Miss Myrtle's future and her estate. A conservatorship that was foisted upon her by a Hathaway law firm that was not anything that she wanted done, and this is what they've done to her. And I've been kind of just stuck in the mud until my name can be cleared. We'll find out what the judge is going to say regarding all the people who've been swarming around my house and stumping my campaign. And I want to remind anybody who's listening and following that Elton Gallagher's legal counsel is Michael Bradbury, who is the former district attorney of Ventura County. And all the implications of that are just, you know, I'm kind of experiencing some weird things going on here. And I still have a lot of faith in our system, but I do see a lot of cowering amongst our elected representatives. And my campaign is based upon, you know, getting to the bottom of all this garbage. Indictments are in the air, truthfulness. We have an opportunity to actually call these people out and save our pensions and our health care system and our educational system and give people back their dignity and not burden them with, you know, all this garbage that's just coming down and the lies and the crimes that are being committed in the name of the United States. Some more people have to step up and endure this type of stuff that I'm going through here in Ojai in order to turn this around. It's real, man. Probably in your town, too, wherever you're listening.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we have I've been gifted with I have a Democratic congressman. His name is Brad Miller. Really, really good congressman, too. He is one of the liberal shining lights here in a very red state. And he has running against him, Steady. He has Vernon Robinson running against him. Have you ever heard of Vernon Robinson?
I can't say that I have.
Oh my gosh! If you haven't heard of Vernon Robinson, we've got to pull up some audio here. I don't know if we can do it immediately, but we're going to pull up some audio then and let you listen to some Vernon Robinson. I'll tell you what, Steady. Can you hang on and we're gonna take a quick break. Can you hang on and come back with us after the break?
Absolutely, sure. I can hang on.
All right. Well, why don't you do that, we'll get right back to you. All right. You're listening to the Bruce Burch Radio Program. This is Radio for a Free America. You can call us at 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email if you're inclined at Bruce Burch. I'm sorry, bruce@brucebirch.com. And you listen to the Bruce Birch Radio Program right here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. So Haditha wasn't such an aberration after all. BBC says U.S. forces appear to have massacred 11 innocent Iraqis in the town of Ashaki in March. A report filed by Iraqi police accused U.S. troops of rounding up and deliberately shooting 11 people in the house, including 5 children and 4 women, BBC says. Marines are also under investigation for the killing of an Iraqi man on April 26th and on May 31st. U.S. troops killed 2 Iraqi women, including one who is evidently pregnant. This is what occupation looks like. Hell, even the Prime Minister of Iraq says U.S. violence against civilians is a daily phenomenon and that U.S. forces do not respect the Iraqi people. Prime Minister Maliki, who Bush helped install, warned that such attacks will play into his decision as to how long to let U.S. troops stay in his country. This is the second time in the last couple of weeks that Maliki has suggested that the U.S. should get out soon. Well, if the Iraqi government wants us out, and if the Iraqi people want us out, and if the American people want the troops home, then why are they still there? Because Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney want them there for the oil, for the military bases, and now for their reputations. But the longer they keep our troops there, the more Hadithas we'll be dealing with. It's the nature. It's the trajectory of occupation. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
You're back on the Bruce Burke radio program. And, a little Molly Hatchet, a little Southern rock there for you. Got to have a little Southern rock in there. Since I am kind of a Southern guy, a little Southern rock. We had, before we went over to the break, we left our good friend Steady on hold. Steady, are you back with us, my friend?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. I got to ask you a question, man, before we get too far into this. What do you think about these signing statements that George Bush is doing?
You mean specifically, you know, saying this is the problem and I want this, this is where, what my problem is with executing what it is I want to do? What you were talking about in the first part of the show?
Yes. Yes.
Honestly, I think somebody is giving him cues because he's, you know, I don't want to talk bad about the president. I mean, the guy is not capable of picking this stuff out himself. Somebody's doing it for him, and he's just reading a teleprompter and saying, oh, okay. And then they're patting him on the head. Good job, George. You did good today. So that's what I think about George Bush being the one who's calling this stuff out. He's just the guy who's the front man for it. And the specifics of it, I've been quite involved in this, let's say, trampling of civil liberties. I mean, when Pat has to read her constitution with 4 deputy sheriffs in here assisting Ventura County guardians to take documents that they don't have the authority to take. We're bearing the brunt of those subversions, which Bush is saying these are in the way. I think I'm on target with that. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. Let me ask you this now. So you are going to court Tuesday, you said?
Yes.
To deal with what they took that day, or were they able to take anything that day?
They were not able to take anything that day due to the heroic recitation of the U.S. Constitution and our rights in the presence of 6 Ventura County officials trying to take documents which a court had not authorized them to take and fronting with that piece of paper saying we have the authority. And we're saying let's see the authority, and the watch captain came down to the house, looked at the documents, and they all had to leave. That is cool. That. That is cool. That woman is Lady Liberty personified.
Right on.
And it only works for the individual when they assert those things, you know, over their own individual things. If you do not do that, they will come and take it, whatever they want. Now, in my case, it has nothing to do with my campaign directly. They're not coming for documents regarding my campaign. They're coming for documents which verify the financial background of Ms. Myrtle and her staying in her home and how much money it costs her per month and she spent over the last decade to stay in her home. And what I'm presenting as a report is what it's cost her to stay here and her overall pictures of her investments and the property. And what has happened in November 2002, Michael came into the picture, and her estate all of a sudden stopped a death spiral by way of assets and started appreciating again. Everyone took hits in 2000, and it continued to destroy people's portfolios, and it can, you know, they're floating right now. But people are having to work extra years to cover their retirement. Everybody lost a lot of money. And since I've been here and in charge of the estate and the resources, there has been an explosion of accrued value and improvements in the home. And that genie's got to be kept in the bottle. So they came for Ms. Myrtle's documents regarding stewardship of her home over the last 15 to 20 years that we've been preparing reports on. And they do not want that information presented. So they came to take that. But we're not, they haven't asked for any of it. See, we said we got this data and it shows this and they don't want to see it. They came to take it. So we can't show it. And this is regarding Ms. Myrtle. But if they can make Michael Stettler out to be a dirtbag, elder abusing, money stealing, you know, the person of that type or sort, then the campaign's got nothing. You see what I'm saying? Do you see how it comes around the front? This is what's going on. I mean, those are serious indictments, but we'll find out what happens. We throw ourselves at the mercy of the court here. Ms. Myrtle does not understand the dynamic involved with her estate or the position of her family, which has assaulted her estate and slandered and libeled my name and taken every step possible to get me out of here. And just so you know, those individuals associated with the family work in the banking industry. I'm just, you know, those are the details involved here.
Well, you know, that's absolutely repugnant that they did that to start with, that they came in to take stuff, you know, and had no warrant and had really no legal standing to be able to do that to start with. But there again, you know, does any of that surprise us in that, you know, when you have a, you know, again, you start at the top. If you've got a guy who will not honor the law, how far back down does it run? And, you know, how far down does the lawlessness, you know, carry down, trickle down, I guess?
Well, just for those who listen to Bob and Bruce and John and Rama and Head On Radio Network, you know, you got someone here who's of like mind, who shares a lot of the same views and feels the same way that we do, you know, collectively about our country, who stepped up. I don't know what I'm doing this, but I know I'm empowered to do it, and I only have to be 25 and a registered voter. I mean, I don't even have to be a registered voter. I just have to be a resident of California. And you can do it in your state, folks, and you can do it in your district, and you can still write in November. In California, the write-in period starts September 11th, and it goes through to October. So anyone in California, man, start printing today and talking to your neighbors and just make a run. Get your 45 and 60 signatures and file and do it. There's for write-in period, write it in. Just put the notch in your belt. Go talk to the people. We have to change this ourselves. If the people do not rise up with an identity that we're taking back our nation, they will continue to crush us. And this war and the coming financial problems, people, we have to move. We have to move now. We cannot wait and see what happens in November. We have to be proactive. And this summer, you cannot take a vacation and think it's going to go away. It is not. I love all of you, man. That's tough talk, but I love you.
You're absolutely right, Steady. Am I coming through to you okay?
I got you.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I do want to, before we take our, we got to go to over to another break here in just a second, but before we do that, I wanted to share with you a, I wanted to share.
Losing you, bro.
All right, well, okay. Is that better?
I got you.
Thank
now.
You. Okay. I wanted to share with you before we go over to a break about a certain gentleman named, or that's a very loosely used term, Vernon Robinson, who is here in North Carolina and running against Brad Miller. And I wanted to wanted you to hear this latest ad that Robinson is playing and trying to use this to win an election. Agnes, if you could go ahead and run that.
This message was paid for by Air Force Academy graduate Vernon Robinson. Every night, 7,000 aliens rush into our country illegally, and your ultra-liberal congressman, Brad Miller, refuses to guard the border. Instead of deporting them, he votes for amnesty and throws them a party with your tax dollars. Brad Miller gives these aliens welfare, driver's licenses, Social Security, free health care, free lawyers, free public education, even free school lunches. These aliens pay no income tax and send their money back to Mexico. Then they take to the streets, waving the Mexican flag and demanding more. Unbelievably, Brad Miller voted to allow these illegals to burn the American flag while waving the Mexican flag.
Oh.
Brad Miller supports gay marriage and sponsored a bill to let American homosexuals bring their foreign homosexual lovers to this country on a marriage visa.
Oh.
If Miller had his way, America would be nothing but one big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals. But if you elect Vernon Robinson, that party's over.
I'm Vernon Robinson, and I approve this message because Brad Miller's out of touch, and soon he'll be out of Congress.
That's kind of gnarly right there. That's the state of affairs of U.S. politics. Can we not discuss ideas, please? Can we move on from this situation where mudslinging is the day and none of it's true anyways, and everybody says everything that they don't know what they're saying, and they get behind it with passion? But we do not, we don't solve anything, and we become further in debt. That type of campaigning has got to stop, and people need to demand that. Let's talk about some ideas. Let's talk about the survivability of our nation and our population, and protect our pensions and our future by investing in our kids. Let's love our kids, man. Let's take care of the future by taking care of our kids, and
absolutely,
hospitals stay open and pensions are secure. Stop the war.
Yeah.
It's basic stuff, man. This invasion of aliens and stuff. These people need work. They're enduring the same thing, and it's fear mongering. It's terrible.
I'm ashamed of
the political situation in the United States, but I intend to change it.
Absolutely, and I think what's really more repugnant about any of this is that again, he's taking a page out of the playbook of people like Karl Rove, who say we don't need to give them anything, you know, we don't need to run on issues that really matter to people. Let's run on issues that are just going to get them all pissed off. Let's run on issues that are just going to make them angry, and you know, it's all about wedge issues. It's all about, you know, it appealing to the base human emotion rather than issues that really matter, like healthcare. Like, you know, like a decent living wage, I don't know, stuff that really matters to people. Now, you'll see in places like here in the South, they will directly vote against, people will vote against their best interest because they're scared the gays are going to get married, or they're scared the immigrants are going to overrun the country, or they're scared that somebody, or as Mr. Robinson so aptly put it, they're scared that gay immigrant marriages are going to happen or something.
Yeah, you get all these alien, this alien subterfuge stuff. But on the gay marriage note, you know, I actually am, Miss Myrtle and I are using the domestic partnership to protect, trying to protect her estate because the tens of thousands of dollars she spent for trusts and wills and all the paperwork associated with keeping your stuff has not defended her. So during the Democratic convention in Sacramento, we filed for domestic partnership as a last line of defense. You know, like, hey, we're going to stay in our home and we can meet the basic necessities of food, shelter, and clothing. She doesn't have to have someone come in and tell her what to do and spend her money and appoint financial analysis and hire attorneys who don't represent her interests and have the county come in and seize documents and guardians who say they operate in the interest of the public who do not. Excuse me. I love you all.
All right. Michael, thank you so much for calling on the program. I got to go to a break now, but it's always great to have a conversation with you, and thank you for dialing in. All right, man, and thanks for calling in.
Love you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye now.
Bye now. And that's Michael Stettler, who is a former candidate for Congress. I think he's still doing the write-in thing. But, you know, here's a guy who started listening to conversation radio and felt that, you know, that it was necessary, absolutely necessary, morally necessary, he said to me once, to try to make a change and to try to get out there and unseat a Republican candidate or a Republican incumbent there in California. So, Michael, good on you. Keep up the good work. You're doing great work, and you have my respect and my honor. We're going to go ahead and take a break now. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can call me. That's right, Bruce Birch. And we'll pick up the dime. 1-877-443-2366 is the number. Bruce Birch Radio Program is the show. Head On Radio Network is the network. We'll be right back.
Nickelodeon has kids. Talk to their parents about tough issues.
Before I talk to my stepdad, I feel sort of alone. Last year, I got picked on, and I felt really bad. And I talked to Jimmy about it.
Well, sure, I got picked on when I was little. Having the chance to talk about it, I think, with someone makes you feel like you're not alone.
I know that he wants me to work it out myself, but on the other hand, sometimes he gives me straight advice, and it works.
I think the talking part is probably enough for us. We don't look at these talks as big events. We look at it as, you know, just part of the daily routine.
After we finish talking, I feel much better.
Well, he got to feel like he was that I was a much bigger loser than he was.
Talk together.
A part of the big help.
For more information, go to nick.com.
It helped me a lot.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
What do nurses, teachers, and moms all have in common?
We help kids grow,
learn,
and thrive.
And they are all being targeted by Governor Schwarzenegger in this year's budget. Governor Schwarzenegger used to be known as an action hero. But what kind of hero targets moms and families to bear the brunt of budget cuts? In fact, the governor is choosing corporations over California's hardworking mothers. 70% of California's corporations pay no taxes at all, while the single biggest budget cut this year is to programs that benefit hardworking moms and their families, like child care, CalWORKs, and Medi-Cal. Governor Schwarzenegger, did you know that 92% of nurses and 76% of teachers are women? Stop targeting California's moms and kids. For more information, please call the California Partnership at 562 562- 862-2070. Brought to you by the California Partnership. On the web at california-partnership.org.
You're back with Bruce Birch on the Bruce Birch Radio Program. We are being brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and we're talking about it right here. You know, one of the stories that I talked to you about at the top of the hour before we, when I sort of was introducing the radio program, was this whole thing, this story about Vince Welnick and the fact that he passed away. Vince Welnick was the keyboardist, the last keyboardist for the Grateful Dead, and he passed away yesterday at the age of 51. I didn't see a cause of death, but you know there was that really weird thing. I'm trying to remember the exact theory. The theory was that starting with Ron McKernan, who was the original Pigpen, right? He was the original keyboardist for the Dead, and he passed away, I think, of a drug overdose or something. After him, there was, I'm trying to remember all the different names. They've had like four or five keyboardists, but four out of six have died. Four out of six keyboardists from the Grateful Dead have passed away. Now that's an extraordinarily high number of people to pass away, who have held the same position in a rock and roll band. And Constantine. And Bruce Hornsby, who also was keyboardist for the Dead, are still living. So you know, but anyway, Vince Welnick died. And actually, what I wanted to do as a tribute, if you will, to Vince and to Jerry Garcia, we're going to do a little bit of a patriotic. We're going to play a little bit of a patriotic clip. This is actually Vince Welnick, Jerry Garcia, and Bob Weir singing the national anthem at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. Agnes, go ahead and run that.
And now may we direct your attention to in front of the pitcher's mound to honor America in the singing of our national anthem. Jerry Garcia, Bob Weir, Vince Welnick, San Francisco's own, the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
And that was the Grateful Dead at the opening ceremonies of the, I believe it was the 1993 baseball season in San Francisco, there at Candlestick Park. And Vince Welnick, 51 years old, who is a longtime member of the Grateful Dead and keyboardist, passed away yesterday and of unknown causes. That was a very sweet clip, and that was he and Jerry Garcia and Bob Weir singing the national anthem. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program. Glad to have you with us. Stick around. We're going to do news here in a minute, and then we're going to do another hour of this wonderful show. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The AFL-CIO has generated nearly 125,000 letters so far to McDonald's and Chipotle executives calling on them to improve wage and working conditions for workers harvesting tomatoes in Florida. The coalition of Immokalee workers took on another giant company and won when they launched a similar campaign at Taco Bell to get that fast food giant to agree to pay more for tomatoes so the harsh working conditions of tomato workers could be improved. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney visited Immokalee in April. AFL-CIO says that it's just the beginning of its participation supporting Immokalee workers in this McDonald's campaign.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper. Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Would-be whistleblowers might need to start whistling a new tune after the Supreme Court ruled earlier this week that what public employees say is not always protected under the First Amendment. The vote came down 5-4, with Samuel Alito casting the deciding vote. Jeff Rook is Executive Director of Public Employees for Environmental Protection. He explains the potential impact of the decision.
It makes candor inside the agencies much more difficult and creates this anomaly that says public employees will have constitutional protection only when they go outside of their job duties or go public. And those that try and resolve issues constructively within their chain of command have no constitutional protection.
Rook added that the new rules will now give management even more control over employees.
And in agencies that have greater discretion, they'll know that they're on much stronger grounds to get rid of these people right away. In other words, management is now armed with the legal tools to snuff out dissent early and effectively without challenge.
Healthcare Now, a national coalition of labor, community, and faith-based groups, is calling for a national day of local actions June 7th, in support of the United States National Health Insurance Act. That act has been introduced in the U.S. House by Representative John Conyers of Michigan. The Conyers bill would create a single-payer national health care plan covering all necessary medical procedures for everyone in the U.S. 70 members of Congress are co-sponsoring the bill. Now here's Greg Gordon with WIN Sports.
Lance Armstrong has been cleared of doping charges stemming from the 1999 Tour de France.
Last August, a French newspaper reported that six of Armstrong's urine samples from 1999 came back positive for EPO when they were retested in 2004. Armstrong has strongly denied using the endurance-boosting hormone or any other banned substance. The International Cycling Union accused the World Doping Agency of misconduct and unfairly targeting Armstrong. Armstrong retired from professional cycling after winning his seventh consecutive Tour de France in 2005.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
All right. That's right, you're back on with Bruce Birch. And, you know, every time I hear that, I love my buddy John Fox. He's just a fantastic guy, and he really is. He's full of energy, and I love this guy. But I feel like I've got to come out with boxing gloves on when I hear that. Maybe he's trying to tell me something. Maybe I need to come out fighting in the second hour of the program. And I may just do that. If you want to get in on the program, you can do that by dialing 1-877, the number 4, head on, 1-877-4. 443-2366. You can also send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. And over the last few minutes or last hour or so, I got a couple of emails. The first one is let me just go over this. This is the United Methodists' call for accountable leadership. I'm just going to read this to you. Because I this is kind of an interesting thing. This was sent to me by friends of the program. So thank you for sending this. Let's see, who is this who sent this? Let me take a look here. This would be Tim. Tim and Ramona sent this. So thank you guys. The United Methodists call for accountable leadership. Who are we? We are United Methodists bringing a letter of complaint against United Methodist Church members George W. Bush and Richard Dick Cheney for their chargeable offenses of crime, immorality, disobedience to the order and discipline of the United Methodist Church, and dissemination of doctrine contrary to the established standards of doctrine of the UMC. We are calling for accountability and repentance from these two members for their sinful behavior. This specific letter of complaint originates from two United Methodist members, the Reverend Courtney Ball and Josh Stewart, from the Iowa Annual Conference, but we are encouraging anyone who reads the letter below and agrees with it to sign their name to the letter as well. When the letter has had time to circulate and gain signatures, it will be presented to the various recipients listed on the letter in order that they may investigate the claims and push for a resolution to the complaint. And here is the letter of complaint. Oh, my goodness, this is long. I don't know if I can read the whole thing. I'll read part of it to you. All right. We, the undersigned, do hold that George W. Bush, member of Highland Park United Methodist Church in Dallas, Texas, and Dick Cheney, local membership unknown, are undeniably guilty of at least four chargeable offenses for lay members as listed in 2702.3, of the 2000 Book of Discipline of the United Methodist Church. These offenses are crime, immorality, disobedience to the order and discipline of the UMC, and dissemination of doctrine contrary to the established standards of doctrine of the UMC. For these offenses, we, the undersigned, call for an immediate and public act of repentance by the respondents. If the respondents do not reply with sincere and public repentance for their crimes, we demand that their membership in the United Methodist Church be revoked until such time that they sincerely and publicly repent. All right. If you want to go check this out, I'm not going to read much more of this, but I will give you the website address. You can go and check this out if you're so inclined. www. You got your pencil ready? Because you might have to write this down. Okay, here I go. www.they must repent.com. www.theymustrepent.com. And, you know, I don't know if you're a member of the United Methodist Church or not, but if you are and you want to sign the letter, I don't know if you have to be a member. I don't know that there's anything that says you have to be. I'm sure they want to keep it fairly clean. But, yeah, you can sign off on the letter. I think they've gotten over 950 signatures on the website. And when they get 1,000 confirmed signatures, they'll send the letters to the appropriate places. I think it's kind of funny with the undisclosed membership of Dick Cheney. If Dick Cheney is the member of a church, oh my God. Oh, he's okay. I am being told in the chat room where I want to tell you, if you haven't gone into the Head On Radio Network chat room, you need to go because these guys are amazing, man. They can research like there is no tomorrow. My friend Lottie tells me that Dick Cheney is a Roman Catholic. That would explain a lot. Yes, I think I'm a Roman Catholic. And I think, yeah. Okay, Dick, go away. You know, I almost forgot to mention this, and I really hate this. My good friend Keith Lake is there in the room. Keith Lake also restreams this radio program on his website, The Last Radio Station. So go Google The Last Radio Station. If you put that into Google or into Yahoo search or whatever, it will come up to his website. You can go and listen to this radio program also there every Sunday evening from 10 until midnight on the Eastern Coast. So, and that would be 7 to 9 West Coast. But he streams it in WMA format, which is something different than what we've got here, which is just straight up MP3 format. So, all right, I wanted to cover that. I also got an email from Gene from Oregon. And Gene sends me an email that basically talks about, and it's kind of an interesting article. I'll read this part of it to you. On Monday, June 19th, about 4,000 government workers representing more than 50 federal agencies, from the State Department to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, will say goodbye to their families and set off for dozens of classified emergency facilities stretching from the Maryland and Virginia suburbs to the foothills of the Allegheny Mountains. They will take to the bunkers in an evacuation that this author's sources describe as the largest continuity of government exercise ever conducted, a drill intended to prepare the U.S. government for an event even more catastrophic than the September 11th, 2001 attacks. This exercise is the latest manifestation of an obsession with government survival that has been a hallmark of the Bush administration since 9/11, a focus of enormous and often absurd time, money, and effort that has come to echo the worst follies of the Cold War. The vast secret operation has updated the duck and cover scenarios of the 1950s with state-of-the-art technology. Alerts and updates delivered by pager and PDA, wireless priority service, video teleconferencing, remote backups to ensure that essential government functions continue undisrupted should a terrorist's nuclear bomb go off in downtown Washington. Well, you know, I wish they were more worried about the safety of the rest of us. My God. Yeah, there's so more. Oh. Okay. Thanks, Gene, for sending me that story. No, but really, really thank you, man. I appreciate that. Again, if you want to send me an email, you can do that. You can send me a message, and I'll read it on the air, or, you know, a link or whatever. It looks interesting. I'll shoot it out there. You can send that to Bruce at brucebirch.com. That's Bruce at brucebirch.com. Let's see. There was a couple other things I want to talk about tonight. One of them in particular was today is the 17th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square protests that happened in China, which ended up, with a massacre there. And, the protests
You know, we'll get over to that after we take a break, but I, you know, hold me to it. Now, if you want to get in on the program, you can call 1-877-443-2366. Gosh, that was fast. 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. You are listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Traffic. All this traffic. When will it end? Doesn't it seem like there are more cars on the road every day?
As our population continues to grow, our daily commute isn't the only thing changing. Rapid population growth around the world threatens our quality of life in other ways. It endangers the environment, economic development, even the future health of our children. U.S. support for voluntary family planning programs worldwide improves everyone's quality of life and helps slow population growth. Find out how you can help increase support for these crucial programs. We're Population Action International, working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told you that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fat, some flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Hey, Ben, where are we?
What are you, born yesterday? We're at the doctor's office.
I'm sick? Already? Oh, break it to me, Ben. What have I got?
Kid, relax. We're here for our second newborn screening.
A newborn screening? What's that?
You see, we got tested for these rare diseases when we are first born. But sometimes they don't show up till we're older. So you got to get the second test between 7 and 14 days.
Diseases? I feel sick. Oh, I better got something in the nursery. Remember that kid who screamed all the time?
Breathe, baby. This test is for treatable stuff. If anything is wrong, now's the time to find out.
I heard even healthy-looking kids can have something deadly, Ben.
That's why every baby's got to go back for his second screening.
So, with the second heel stick, you think my chances are good?
Heel stick? What heel stick? Nobody told me nothing about a heel stick.
Oh, brother!
For information on this newborn screening program, call the Tech Department of Health.
Walking down the king's highway,
you're back on the radio program, the Bruce Birch radio program, here live on the Head On Radio Network. It's about 18 minutes after the hour. It's excellent to have you on board listening to me tonight. And if you want to get on the program, you can do that too. You can dial 1-877-443-2366, or you can send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. Either way, that's how you can get in touch with me. When we went over the break, and actually, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the Tiananmen massacre of 1989, which actually is today is the 17th anniversary. Not sure if anyone was aware of that. But the protests there started out kind of on a small scale, and April, May, 1989. And students who were, protesting, if you will. I just had a complete brain freeze. My goodness. Students that were protesting there to try to create democracy in China, Tiananmen Square used to be the center of government building and it was bulldozed back in the 50s after some riots, by understanding anyway. And the protests that the students started grew larger and larger and larger. And in April 26th of 1989, an editorial in the People's Daily, following an internal speech made by Deng Xiaoping, accused the students of plotting turmoil. This statement enraged the students, and on the April 29th, about 50,000 Chinese students went out in the streets of Beijing, ignoring the warning of a crackdown made by authorities, and insisted that the government withdraw the statement. These students did. They escalated. On May 4th, about 100,000 students and workers marched in Beijing, making demands for free media reform and a formal dialogue between the authorities and student elected representatives. The government rejected their dialogue, only agreeing to talk to members of appointed student organizations. On May 13, 1989, large groups of students occupied Tiananmen Square and started a hunger strike, demanding that the government withdraw the accusation made in the People's Daily editorial and begin talks. Hundreds of students went on hunger strike and were supported by hundreds of thousands of protesting students and residents of Beijing, which lasted for a week. The government declared martial law on May 20th. The military, the Chinese military, did enter Beijing. But they were blocked by throngs of protesters, and the army was eventually ordered to withdraw from Beijing. Meanwhile, the demonstrations continued. The hunger strike was approaching the end of the third week, and the government resolved to end the matter before deaths occurred. After deliberation among Communist Party leaders, the use of the military force to resolve the crisis was ordered. And Zhao Ziyang was ousted from political leadership as a result of his support for the student demonstrators. The Communist Party then decided to stop the situation before it escalated any further. Soldiers and tanks from the 27th and 38th Armies of the People's Liberation Army were sent to take control of the city. In his press conference of the 5th, announcing sanctions on communist China in the face of threats to do the same from U.S. Senator Jesse Helms, President Bush also suggested intelligence he had received concerning not only some disunity in the military ranks, but even the possibility of some military-on-military clashes during those days, but that the units were brought in from outside provinces because the local People's Liberation Army were considered to be somewhat sympathetic to the protests of the people of the city. So they had pretty much, a possibility of an insurrection, not only protests, but an insurrection going on.
there that day. Extensive roadblocks constructed by the citizens of Beijing slowed the progress of the military taking over the city. The battle continued on the streets surrounding the square, with protesters repeatedly advancing toward the heavily armed troops of the People's Liberation Army or constructing barricades with vehicles, and the PLA firing directly into the crowds, even using flamethrowers, only occasionally firing tear gas ahead to clear the street. Many injured citizens were saved by rickshaw drivers who ventured into the no man's land between the soldiers and the crowds and carried the wounded off to hospitals. And after the attack on the square, people could be seen by live television coverage, many wearing black armbands in protests of the government's action, crowding various boulevards or congregating by burnt-out and smoking barricades as the PLA chased crowds and individuals and systematically established checkpoints around the city. During that period of time, nearly over 2,000 were killed, and 7,000 to 10,000 were injured in the Tiananmen Square protests and massacre of June 1989. As a result, there were many, many arrests and purges. Many of the members and student leaders of the Chinese Democracy Movement were arrested, put in prison, and that their one time that they were able to publicly demand democracy there in China, the Chinese government would not have it and put down the protest, eventually murdering over 2,000 people. So as you're going to your rest this evening, have a moment of silence for those souls that were seeking democracy, if you will, 17 years ago. Because it's kind of important, I believe, for us to honor those spirits of those who have come before us, who gave all in the name of living free. That's kind of important, I think. We've had it here free, you know, and I just want to really quickly tie that into where we are now in the United States. And that is that, you know, we may not have an official government newspaper that tells us what we need to think. We may not have an official government and, you know, an official government television station that tells us, well, Fox is closed, but it's still private. An official government television station that tells us what to think. But we do have media that are operating in collusion with our government and are running down the rabbit holes, the politics of misdirection, the Vernon Robinsons and the gay illegal immigrants and all that stuff. The media eats that stuff up. And meanwhile, as one person put it in the chat room a few minutes ago, meanwhile, Rome burns. And, you know, I couldn't put it any more plainly that, you know, I wonder at what point do we decide that the limitations on our freedom, the signing statements by President Bush, the torture chambers and the secret prisons around the world, the Guantanamo Bay concentration camps, the Abu Ghraib prison scandals, the murders at Haditha, at what point do we, freedom-loving, democracy-loving people, take to the streets and take our country back from this murderous band of thugs that is running the country? At what point do we do that? What is it going to look like when you finally decide that it's time to stand up and make your voice known that you disagree with how they're running this country? What's that going to look like, ladies and gentlemen? I challenge you to think about that. And if you want to share what you think that'll look like, you can do that by calling us, calling me. 1-877-443-2366 is the number, 1-877, the number four, head on, and Bruce at BruceBurch.com. Now, this radio program is being brought to you by the Head On Radio Network, and we're damn glad to be on it, and we're damn glad to be bringing you live radio programming. So stick around. We got to take a quick break, and then after that, we'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. We've seen this play before, haven't we now? You know, the one where the Bush administration pretends to be interested in a diplomatic solution, but is really trying to get all its ducks in a row for going to war. This is the very same ruse that the administration wheeled out in the months leading up to the Iraq War, and some of the language is identical. Bush said many times that Saddam Hussein faces a choice to do what Washington wants or face the consequences. Condoleezza Rice, in appearing to offer an opening for negotiations to the Iranians, said the same thing. The Iranian government's choices are clear. This is how the Bush administration puts the onus on those it intends to attack. Rice insisted that before the U.S. would sit down and talk with the Iranians, not bilaterally as they wish, but together with the allies, Iran must first fully and verifiably suspend all enrichment-related and reprocessing activities. Even if Iran meets those demands, which is unlikely, especially given those fudge words fully and verifiably, it still won't be out of target range, as Rice made abundantly clear. The nuclear issue, she said, is not the only obstacle standing in the way of improved relations. And then she repeated the refrain of the Bush administration that he's not taking any options off the table. Listen, this is a setup, plain and simple. For Bush, diplomacy is but a formality, a preface, a prelude, mere calisthenics before the big event. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Army and with Stalin's awful crew, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Pearl Harbor, too. Across the sweep of human history, there's a truth they never tell. There's more horror in obedience than there'd be if we'd rebel. So when they speak to you of glory in colors bright and true, and using words like good and evil, say it all comes down to you. When they offer you a weapon, send you out.
And you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, and if you're interested in that song, that was Scott Ainsley. And Scott Ainsley wrote a song called Don't Obey, and I actually did an interview with him way, way back in October of last year. Wonderful spirit, fantastic musician. And I'll, you know what, I'm trying to remember the website now.
Well, you know what? I'll post it up on the blog or something, or I'll, you know, put it on my website at allthingsreconsidered.org. Actually, you can probably go to allthingsreconsidered.org, click on the archives and podcasts, and go to that show, and I'll bet you it's right there. I bet you there's a link on my website to his site. So maybe I'll find it during the break. Okay. Let's go over to the phones. Let's get back to the phones. Our good friend Jim is calling in. Jim, how are you doing tonight?
All right. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Better than I deserve, my friend. Better than I deserve.
Well, I doubt if that's seriously the case. But nonetheless, two things. And this references to Tiananmen Square. Do you think that perhaps you might be referring to the same thing that could happen on Constitution Avenue or Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington?
I think it could happen, yes.
Okay. All right, the second point is this. You mentioned earlier in your program about federal employees being relocated and in order to ensure the continuity of government. Can you please give me a précis of what that announcement entails and where it came from?
This was from the Washington Post today,
okay.
Page B01.
Right.
And what this is it's a contingency plan. A drill, really.
How many people?
It's an extra.
How many people and which agencies are involved, please, sir?
Okay. 4,000 government workers.
Okay.
From 50 federal agencies.
All right.
And, you know, I'm sure if you, I mean, I'm sure you can probably get this right off WashingtonPost.com. So, but yeah. Isn't that kind of scary?
What precisely? I mean, I've always been very interested in what language means. I have not looked at the Post today, and it comes to my home, and I haven't had a chance to read it today. But exactly, more specifically, what did they say the reasons were to ensure the continuity of government in case there were, for example, someone was trying to smuggle some type of nuclear device into the Capitol?
That's exactly the reasoning. The drill is intended to prepare the U.S. government for an event even more catastrophic than the September 11th, 2001 attacks, such as a terrorist bomb or you know, the scenario that was quoted in the article is, should a terrorist bomb, nuclear bomb, go off in downtown Washington?
Well, you know, basically what we're looking at is a Tom Clancy type of scenario that was outlined very clearly in that film, The Sum of All Fears. Except
yep.
Baltimore was the target, and they used Camden Yards, I believe, as the as a focal point of the delivery of the of the weapon. But you know that is indeed ominous, and we're talking about 50 government agencies, and these people are going to be tailed from their current positions for how long? Didn't say.
I think 2 weeks, actually. Let me go back to the very first page. I think it says here. No, it doesn't say. But it does say they're going to be saying goodbye to their families. So
well,
say goodbye.
Readiness exercises involve things of this nature, and this is pro forma. In many respects,
right.
It is. I mean, you know, basically they have to have some type of contingency plan, which in fact is prudent because our borders are very porous. I mean, I wish that we would take more of a focus on trying to defend our major cities as they do the border between the United States and Mexico because, my God, this is a much more sensitive thing that would happen, but the only word that I can think of is one, and that's just ominous.
Yes, it is. Absolutely is.
I don't know when the last time they had something like this was, and it's been quite a while. I can't think of any number of agencies, and I don't know how many people, they didn't say how many people were involved. Of course, that's all classified, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, they said 4,000 people were going to be involved.
4,000 people?
Yes.
And, well, you know.
And over 50 agencies.
50 agencies.
50.
50 agencies.
Yes.
Well, you can imagine something like that happening in D.C. when it would, you know, explode, as if it would roll right up Rock Creek Park and take out, well, it would take out D.C. probably. They would probably have a bomb that large that could do that, and it wouldn't take a very large one. The one that they used in Hiroshima could probably do the same job, you know.
Here's my feeling, Jim. If someone sets off a bomb like that, are these people going to have time to evacuate?
No, they're not.
No, they're not.
The I don't know. I mean, what they're going to have people. I don't know.
come on. I mean, you know, this is a great exercise, but I think the reality is the only way they could ever evacuate everyone is if there was some intelligence beforehand that they had, you know, okay, well, you know what? In 20 minutes, there's going to be a bomb. I mean, this is kind of, you know.
They wouldn't have that type of warning, I wouldn't think, if it were a terrorist nuclear weapon that were smuggled in, because they're certainly not going to tell the FBI, hey, in 15 minutes, you know, you got 15 minutes to leave the city. And so they wouldn't do that. But nonetheless, even if it were a bomb launched from a submarine, for example, I think you'd have 10 minutes or 10 to 15 minutes at most to do what? To kiss your relatives goodbye, and that'd be it, and that's about it. But I guess they have to have contingency plans, and they have to have things so life can go on. But good Lord, you know, one had hoped at the end of the Cold War between this country and the former Soviet Union that we had had a chance to relax a little bit, but I thought that was too good to be true, and that we would be dealing with an enemy that, whereas we could predict what the Russians would do, we can't predict what these people will do and how they will react to what we do. And since we are, in this case, the first acting party or the offending party with these incursions into Southwest Asia, and particularly with Iran and what they plan for Iran, these people could have the same thing planned for us. Yeah. And, you know, there are no oceans that protect us anymore. There is no anything that protects us from any type of major catastrophe of this type, period. And I know they are prepared for contingencies like this because of natural disasters, for example, like hurricanes and tsunamis and things of this nature, because of the changing weather patterns, because they know that Washington is a coastal city and this type of other things. And that's part of the engine or the locomotive driving this train, because they're thinking of other things besides nuclear weapons. They're also thinking probably of what I've just said, you know, if what would happen if the city were inundated by a tidal wave or something like that, or a hurricane that would hit Washington or New York. But as far as evacuation is concerned, that's a non-issue, my friend, because there'd be no way to get those people out of there. And I'm sure you've driven in D.C., and you know exactly what it's like on a normal day.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yep.
I mean,
I've been up there. I go up there probably several times a year.
Right.
Matter of fact, I'm going to be there next week.
Yeah, I used to be, you know, unlike George Bush, who was a tenant, I used to be a resident, so I know exactly what you're talking about. But that was not lost upon me, and it really is, for a minute there, I could feel chills running up and down my spine just thinking of the loss of human life and the loss of so many things, and the loss of life as we know it is today, because it would never be the same. I mean, we're talking about absolutes, and we're talking about things from which it would take hundreds of years to recover.
Yeah, I agree.
Something like that would happen. It's just really frightening.
And, you know, where I am in North Carolina is, you know, it's only, what, four and a half hours away. I dare say something like that happening there would greatly impact us right here, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No,
yeah, you're going to have all
no
kinds
doubt.
Of, yeah. Well, okay. Well, listen, that's a nice way to appreciate the information. I didn't see that, and that is not good. Not good at all. But, I mean, like I say, you've got to have some type of contingency preparation. You know, they had up in West Virginia a huge bunker for the Congress. And that was exposed by the Post in 1993. and it was called Greek Island. And they had a huge thing at the Greenbrier Hotel, this bunker. And now I understand because it's being exposed, they have rebuilt another one. I mean, you have all types of things. You hear about Mount Weather, Virginia. You hear about this, that, and the other, and places where they could relocate. But the thing about it is, even though they have these places designated for these people to come to, would they have time to get there, and how would they get there? Unless they had
exactly
unless William Shatner has given them some advice on how to give a teleporter transporter beam that we don't know about. And I think what's happened to half of them up there is their molecules have been scrambled anyway in their heads.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do think that it's ominous. I mean, I can't help but think that, you know, it's scary. June 19th, I'm going to be very on my P's and Q's.
June 19th is the target date for this exercise.
That is correct. I'm going to probably be watching the news or listening to very closely anything that may be coming out of D.C. Because, the fact that they're all going to be doing this on that one day and they're announcing it ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Well,
one would think that an exercise like this would be pulled off without an announcement, that it would be a secret exercise.
Well, that was exactly the next thing I was going to say. They are announcing this ahead of time, and this is part of a campaign of fear, and it has immense propaganda, consequences upon the American people. And basically, it's the things of this nature, Bruce, you just don't talk about.
Right.
I mean, this is top secret, and you don't talk about stuff like this because you don't want to create panic and things like this. But I can't help but think in the back of my mind, and you have to think in antonyms when you deal with these people. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Maybe they're trying to scare the living daylights out of everybody for whatever purpose, and to create a background of climate of fear to make people think, hey, these are the only people who can protect us and this, that, and the other, and this is another reason why we should control or main control of the levers of power.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely not going to want to be in D.C. on the 19th. That's... if anybody that I know,
that's 200 miles away from D.C. And, we'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, don't know where, like that old song at the end of Dr. Strangelove,
Yep, absolutely. Jim, I got to go to a break.
All right.
So thank you for calling in, and we'll keep our eyes on that one, and we'll see how it turns out. Let's hope it's just an exercise and nothing more.
Indeed, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great night.
You too.
You too. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break now. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. We got a few more minutes left. If you want to call in, 1-877-443-2366. I'll be right back.
Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track. Drums and bass. We getting wild. Don't get the last word. I don't understand the whole reason why you're telling us all that we need to unify. Rally round the flag and beat the drums of war. Sing the same old songs. We heard them all before. Telling me it's unpatriotic, but I call it when I see it. When I see it's idiotic. The tears of one mother are the same as any other. Drop food on the kids while you're murdering the fathers. But don't bother to show it on CNN. Brothers and sisters, don't believe them that it's a war against evil. It's really just revenge engaged on the poorest by the same rich men. Fight terrorists wherever they be found. But why you not bombing Tim McVeigh's hometown? You can say what you want. Propaganda television with all bombings. It's terrorism. Chase down all our enemies. We can bring them to their knees.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on the subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
Son, you catch on quick, I tell you. Very quick, very quick. But I did want to because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Some prayers never reach the sky. Some wounds never heal. They still say someday the South will rise. Man, I want to see that deal. And I want to grow old gracefully. Some old man in the road somewhere, kneeling down in the dust by the side of the interstate.
Rebel all my days. Absolutely. That's Warren Zevon there on a song called Renegade. I totally, totally concur with that. Someday, you know, that song reminds me of the idea that, you know, we need to, when we go, let's go with our boots on. Let's not go laying in a bed, a soft bed with little accoutrements and doilies and funny little pillows and all that stuff. Let's die with our boots on, shall we? Out there in the streets, taking back America for Americans. I'll tell you. We have gone through a lot of interesting conversations tonight. Interesting talks and interesting stories that are out there. Just having a side conversation with a friend of mine here in the chat room, and one of the things that he brought up to me was that they're actually going to be evacuating the National Archives during this exercise. Now, the question I have is, why would they want to evacuate the guys out of the National Archives? It's quite possible that they want to get in there and take something out. Who knows? I don't know. We live in very strange times, ladies and gentlemen. And again, I would challenge you to think about that. Let's just look at this for a minute. The American Revolution happened in the 1770s. The American Revolution that happened in the beginning of this country happened because people got fed up with being told how to act. They got fed up with having to pay taxes without being able to say where the money goes and how it's being spent. We had an American revolution in this country because we wanted to be able to self-determine our fate and our future. And we believed that democracy, where all the people have a voice, was the way to do that. Right now we have people who are running our government who would like to take that away from us. They would like to say, in the guise of safety and security, that we do not deserve our freedom. They would like to say, under the guise of safety and security, that we do not deserve to make our own decisions for ourselves. They would like to say, under the guise of safety and security, sweet, sweet safety and security, that we don't need to have a say in what happens to our country. Just trust them, they say, because after all, the terrorists only have to be right once, and we only have to be right every time. What is wrong with this picture? And when do we as a people rise up and say, safety and security be damned? I want my democracy. I want my freedom. I want my ability to be able to have my voice heard across this country. I want my voice to ring out to say that freedom and democracy is a much higher principle and a much higher calling than safety and security. When do we do that? When do we do that? The radio program was brought to you by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. I'd like to thank Agnes Kincaid for ably and very professionally producing this radio program this evening. Thank you, Agnes. I would also like to thank Peter Godbold at Godbold Computer Services for being wonderful in everything that he does for our radio network in keeping the equipment humming along at breakneck speed so that we can deliver our message to you. Also want to thank Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for streaming this wonderful radio programming and for archiving all of the shows of the Head On Radio Network. You can go to whiterosesociety.org and check out all the wonderful programming he has archived over there. And last but not least, go out and make a difference in the world, man. Because this may be the only last chance that you ever get to do that. And if you lose it and you don't take advantage of it, trust me, you'll regret it. So go make a difference. It's your democracy, too, and it's not a spectator sport. Thanks for joining me this evening. This is Bruce Birch. We'll be live with you next week. Check out Bob Kincaid during the week. Go make a difference because democracy matters. Thanks for joining me. See you next week.
Was a time alone. always remember. I could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution.